I would also vote for Loghain in 2024.
Thank you very much. It just makes sense given the current political climate.
I mean, it's definitely not the worst candidate that we're going to have out there. So how are you doing? It's been like 2 weeks.
I feel like it's been longer than that, but maybe it hasn't. Time during the holidays takes on a whole different speed. It's very...
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking a couple of days ago about something I had done. And in my head, I was like, man, that was like 2 or 3 months ago. It was like a week and a half ago.
Yep. Yep. Everything just seems compounded.
Well, between travel and trying to, you know, do all of the celebrations and going to people's houses and having people come over to yours, it's just a lot, you know?
Yep.
It's good times.
We had a New Year's Day party, and I kept referring it as last month, which I guess it wasn't. That's hilarious. Even. It was January 1st. And it was like not even 10 days ago, or now 10 days ago. I was like, that is ridiculous. But yeah, Dylan is moving. He's selling his house. And so we spent the last week packing everything in his house and cleaning it all so it could be staged. And I hate moving my own stuff. It's a whole other ballgame when you're moving somebody else. It's just the worst experience in the universe.
Moving sucks. Like, you know that you are either a truly trusted or a truly hated friend when someone asks you to help them move their stuff. And you know that you are mortal enemies if there's a piano involved.
I'm glad he doesn't play the piano.
So my sister actually, at one point, she got a piano from her boss for free. And then she had me and my dad and another guy come help her move it. And we get to the house and we find out that it is a old school player piano. And I don't know if you know much about pianos, but a player piano is quite a bit heavier than a traditional piano. Because not only does it have all of the traditional gear that a piano does, it also has the entire mechanism for the player, like whatever that thing is.
Yeah, it's got the electronics and stuff in it.
Oh my word.
Ugh. Yeah, that doesn't sound fun at all. Well, I wouldn't
recommend it, but you know, past that, my sister and I are slowly we're mending our relationship after that. Slowly.
Well, you weren't here last time, and we had Jacob come on and talk at length about episode 4 of The Dragon Reborn.
Oh, I guarantee he did better than me. I have not. Like I said, time passes strangely in the holidays.
Right. No, that's fair. Well, he did an amazing job. He did more research than we've ever done for this podcast.
That tracks. Maybe he should just do the podcast for us.
Yeah, if we don't do anything, we're just here. Well, I wanted to give you a chance to have some comments on episode 4 before we moved on, since you weren't here last week.
This is the book report. Oh, episode 4. What were you, episode 4? That was the one with...
Episode 4 was the one that it got good, finally.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I really,
totally
really
aside,
liked...
just listening, yeah.
Yeah. No, I really liked that one, because it's... Like I've said since we first started this series of the podcast, I wish the entire TV show would have started off with the, opening of episode 4, with Loghain just destroying a city. That would have been so much more engaging. Mm-hmm. Because it was in episode 4, it was incredibly engaging. I was hooked from that minute, and I was ready to watch the rest of the episode instead of sitting here thinking, oh my God, can this get any more campy than it already is? And then it did. But episode 4 did a good job of kind of reframing the TV show.
One thing Jacob pointed out that I didn't realize, and it makes the first episode even more pointless, is that opening scene with the red... Aes Sedai, Aja sisters capturing, that wasn't Loghain. It's a different actor.
You gotta be
it's
kidding.
Different
me.
Everything. And they explained in episode 4 that they caught him while he was sleeping, which is how it happened in the books. So that opening scene is or second opening scene is even more pointless and dumb.
Oh, for the love.
Just bad choices all around. Anyways, great. We're here to talk about
freaking British television. Ruins everything.
Episode 5 and the continuation of, I think, the good streak of the show, except that the opening to this one isn't as strong as the other ones. In every single other episode, the opening scene is like a flashback, like way far back, or, you know, various degrees back. This one opens immediately after the last one ended. So its cold open isn't up to par with the rest, but otherwise I loved this episode. What did you think?
I thought that they did a good job of moving the plot forward and, like I said, getting away from the campiness. There were still a few points where this whole TV show, I'm really curious if they're going to be able to stretch it out as many seasons as they want to, because they're making some choices with it that I think are going to hinder it if they want it to become like a recurring picked up series. And I don't know if it's the tone of the series itself or if it's just, I don't know. I need to do some soul searching on that, but I did like this episode a lot. I liked this episode more than some of the others I've watched.
I'm trying to forgive a lot more, especially on a rewatch. Now that I've seen the whole season and going back and rewatching it, I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt that they wanted to do other things, but COVID either slowed them down or they didn't have enough people they could have on set. Something. I'm just trying to say this was all growing pains and season 2 is going to be better because they're going to listen to their audience and there's going to be a vaccine now. And I think it's going to be easier to film some stuff. That's my standpoint, but I would agree that they're making some bizarre choices that are limiting themselves.
Yeah.
Not giving it the staying power longevity that you want from a sweeping fantasy epic.
Yeah. And I'm like you, I have high hopes that season 2 will be better, but they're not off to a great start with recasting the only person I thought was perfectly cast for his role so far. Outside of
really? Okay. Moray. Well, let's do the recap first because I think there's another perfect casting in this episode, my favorite character now.
All right.
So basically, this episode it starts with them burying the Aes Sedai that died when Loghain broke out, and then Nynaeve had awesome healing bubble. But so they bury them, then it fast forwards a month, which was one of the smartest things they've done, except that it only did a month. It should have been fast forwarded like 3 months and really shown the width and depth of this world. But fast forwards a month, they're all in Tar Valon, or they all get to Tar Valon. White Cloaks attack the Tuatha'an and capture Perrin and Egwene.
Who are not yet in Tar Valon.
Yeah, they're not there yet. Everybody else makes it to Tar Valon. Rand meets Loial, my absolute favorite character in the whole show so far. Sort of have a minor reunite, and then one of the warders whose sister died commits suicide by drugging Lan, who's been watching him, so that he could kill himself. That's the basic overview of this episode, but obviously we have to dive deep down into it. You just said, oh no, about me saying Loial is my favorite character.
Yeah, I didn't like how he plays the character. So in the books, I always thought of him as like a kind of a shy, meek, he's running away because he doesn't want to get bossed around by a wife type of a guy. And he's being played, I don't know, he's almost too wise. Like, he's kind of like an old grandfatherly figure, which I don't really like much. Because in the books, I really thought he was going to be more of like, not a comedic break character, but I thought he was going to be a little more like, almost like a scared puppy who was also super old. Which I was really looking forward to seeing how they were going to play that off, and then they didn't.
I can see having him the scared puppy fun, but I just love his goofy, overly genuine everything. The fact that he keeps talking when people walk out of the room or when the camera stops focusing on him and you can just hear him talking in the background because he doesn't move or think as fast as the humans. The just general, like, alien nature of everything he does and just having him play it so straight and so genuine. I hate his cosmetics and the look of him. I hate that he's not, you know, 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
But everything else about his character, I found just like he stole the show every time he was on the scene. When he walks in at the end of the episode and reunites Nynaeve with Matt and Rand, and like he just keeps talking for that entire scene. And he's, even though the camera has even stopped focusing on him and Nynaeve and Rand are having the reunion. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
They're having the reunion and they're talking plot points and everything, and he's just in the background still talking about how he got into the White Tower. I laughed so hard the first time I saw it, and then like this time when I rewatched it, I was trying to focus on him and hear everything he was saying, and he was giving like this history of how the Ogiers built the White Tower in this whole city, and I was just like, this is perfect.
Well, that's funny. So I'll give it to you. I'll give you a point on that one.
All right. Okay, good. I'm glad we don't like completely hate him.
No, I didn't hate him. It's like a lot of things when you take books and turn them into movies. People go different directions for stylistic reasons. And sometimes, right, you know, it's a hit and sometimes...
And it's with a character as complex as Loial, focusing on different aspects of him, like the fact that you thought it was the most interesting part of him was the fact that he's, you know, 200 something years old, but he's still a scared little puppy dog that doesn't want to do what his mommy says. Whereas my favorite part of him was the fact that he was just so like out of the world. Like he hadn't been around for 200 years.
Sure.
And so he's just like, he doesn't connect, you know, the past is a foreign country and all that. Like even his introducing scene in this, when he's talking to, Rand about how he's obviously an Aiel, even though he claims he's not and he's from the Two Rivers. Like that whole thing of him just completely being insistent and ignoring what this person says. Like, no, you're not whatever race you're claiming to be. That's stupid. Like that was just hilarious because no one actually acts like that. But Loial is just stating reality as he sees it. And I love that.
Fair enough.
I had a bunch of notes this time watching it, which
you were inspired by Jacob. I see.
Yeah.
I thought this was a slacker podcast, and I won't stand for any type of academics here.
No, it's just little things I saw that I'm questioning now. Like when they walk into Tar Valon, or they see it in the distance and they're walking across the bridge at the very beginning, it's Matt and Rand. Oh, no, it's not even Matt and Rand. It's Egwene, Moraine and Nynaeve and Elaine and that whole group. They cross over a bridge and there's this big old stone with Celtic symbols on it. And I'm wondering if that's supposed to be a travel stone, because that was a big deal in either the first or second book. And I'm wondering if they're foreshadowing that right now.
It's possible.
You obviously don't remember that because it was just blink and you miss it. Mm-hmm. They also do this thing this is my biggest problem with the show, the whole season, is the world feels too small.
They are moving through it really quickly.
Yeah.
Because
it feels tiny because of that.
Well, and you know, when you are in the first episode and then the second episode and the third episode and even the fourth episode, and they're all spending time saying, we have to get to Tar Valon, the White Tower, we have to get there. They're making it seem like it's really far away. And when you make it there by episode 5, it really just doesn't feel that far, because in a lot of other shows, you have a lot of scenes of them just like walking, and it's almost like boring to watch, but that helps give you a sense of just the vastness of the world. And in this one, it's... This is kind of dumb. It's almost too action filled when they are traveling, and so it doesn't feel like they've really been going anywhere. And even episode 3, Matt and Rand spend the whole episode camped out in a village, and so they're not going anywhere. So it just seems like, oh, we have to get to the White Tower, and we're there. That was fun.
Yeah, it was only 6 weeks in showtime getting there. and it should have been like 3 months book time. And they go to several different cities, and they don't even end up in Tarvalin in the book.
Right.
In the first
book. It takes a long-ass time to get there.
Everything happens at Camelin or the White Bridge, mm-hmm. and that's where all the big things happen. And they've just condensed that all into Tarvalin, which, okay, that makes sense. I understand you need to move things forward, but it feels so much smaller. But my specific problem in it is, because of that, the moment when Matt and Rand get there, they're traveling in this massive caravan of people, just people marching with just the clothes on their back or packs, and they don't even try to explain why they're there.
Yeah.
Most of these people don't look like they're like travelers. They don't look like they're like merchants or anything like that. They just look like they're displaced wanderers because of a war, which they are. In the book, there's all kinds of conflict going on because of Loghain, because the fact that he took an entire kingdom and was marching an army across the land, like conflict and refugees have started, and they don't explain that. They don't even make a nod to it. So if you're watching, you're just like, oh, there's just a bunch of people walking along this dirt road, and then they move on. They don't explain it at all. So unless you know the context, it's just a weird scene.
Well, like I've said before, one of the things I really like in the book, and I think Robert Jordan does really well, he spends a lot of time referring to things that are going on in disparate parts of the world. He doesn't necessarily talk about them specifically, but there are characters in the book who reference those things obliquely or just spout off rumors, and it just adds to the vastness of this place that's enormous. And unfortunately, the TV show really is just shrinking it a lot. And like Game of Thrones, most recent example of a thing like this, that world is quite a bit smaller, but even that one felt bigger mm-hmm. to me when I was watching it than it does in the Wheel of Time. Or at least, referring to the specific island that King's Landing and Winterfell are on. Once you expand it out into the other side of the world, it starts to, you know, obviously take on some scale, but.
Right. Yeah. And we feel like we're moving like three towns over. It doesn't feel like we've moved across a continent, which you should have. And I think they need to step up the game there is show you how big this world is.
Mm-hmm.
Because another problem with that, my next note on here is, why in the hell are the White Cloaks so close to the White Tower? Like, you can see the White Tower from the place where the White Cloaks kidnap Egwene and Perrin and attack the Tuatha on Tinker people. Yeah. Like, you can see the tower. That's insane.
Right.
Why are they that close?
Right. That makes no sense with the power struggle that goes on between them, because they're all battling for spheres of influence. And the White Tower, their sphere of influence is that area directly around it. So the White Cloaks are more invested in areas like Camelin, which the TV show isn't showing. Now, that said, do like the guy who is the questioner. He does an excellent job of playing his character.
He plays Child Valda. Yeah. He's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it's really hard to pull off like that kind of zealous devotion
mm-hmm.
to excuse violence without it seeming cheesy. And he just did such a good job of that role.
Excellent job.
It was... Mm-hmm. Really creepy. Yeah. His name is Abdul Salik or Salig. I can't pronounce anything.
Sure. I've known that for years. That's his name. Don't know why you tried.
I don't either. I wrote it down like that was going to help me. Ridiculous.
Yeah, brother.
But yeah, the fact that they go to the White Tower and they camp outside the city of Tarvalon. Way later in the series, and it's a huge deal that they're even in the shadow of the White Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And in this TV version, they're just there.
It's not a big deal at all. They're straight chilling, which is kind of dumb, because if they were that close to the White Tower, you best know the Reds would just go out in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And be like, no, you didn't.
A man walking around with a chain of Aes Sedai rings, the Red would eviscerate him.
Right.
It was
like in a second.
It makes no sense.
It's dumb.
Yeah.
But I do. Really, I like really that whole scene. I like him and the scene between Perrin and Egwene.
Yeah. The whole torture to mm-hmm. get Egwene to channel, and then Perrin his eyes going golden and calling the wolf, like all of that was done very, very well. And him torturing it. One thing I did not notice the first time through and could not notice it the second time through is every single white cloak has the same, except for Child Valda, they all have the same military-ish haircut and giant military mustache.
That sounds about right.
It's like, it was just like, wait, was this this was a choice that somehow got past me the first time, but what is going on right now? Yikes.
It's almost like Cossack.
The mustache is part of their uniform.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's bizarre. I do like that they are slowly fleshing out everyone's ability or specialness one at a time. I don't know why they haven't really done anything with Matt, because I want to say that he's always had like a little bit of luck on his side. So I don't know why they're not really playing around with that at all.
In the first episode.
Not enough.
They like, kind of implied the opposite in the first episode.
That was the problem. And that's what I'm saying. Like, the first episode, they were gambling or something. And if you've read the books, you're expecting Matt to win because that's what he does. And then he loses, which is a stupid misdirect, because if you've read the books, he's lucky. If you haven't read the books, just let him win, damn it. And if they didn't want to do it that way because it's too heavy-handed, that's fine. It could have been something as simple as like someone shoots a arrow and it misses him by like half of an inch, or something falls from a upper window, same thing. Like it can just be like really stupid things of luck.
Yeah, it's weird that they're even the fact that he's possessed by the knife thing. It's weird that it just kind of makes him a grouchy asshole. In the book, it made him like horribly sick and gave him visions and stuff, and he was just out of it constantly. And he has no memory of the entire like traveling to Tarvalin in the books because of it. In this one, he's just kind of an asshole, which that's his character anyway, so it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he's not enough of an asshole that you really realize anything's wrong with him. It's just like,
Like he yelled at a kid at one point in this episode, and that was it. Yep. And then the big thing for this episode was, since they've been like trying to hint at any one of them could be the Dragon Reborn, it's when Loghain's carted through the city, he makes direct eye contact with Matt and starts laughing. And that's the extent of that. And I'm just like, you got to give Matt more to do. He's such an interesting character. He's
really, I really like Matt's character. And they're just...
When we finally get to the White Tower, and we like actually get to spend some time in there, the Liandrin and Nynaeve conversation, after Nynaeve's like sneaks off, is one of the best things that's happened in the show. And if you haven't read the books, I think you are extraordinarily confused by that relationship, by Liandrin and Moraine and Nynaeve and that whole thing, because I've talked to a few different people who haven't read the books at all. And after that scene, they were like, I don't know if Liandrin is a good guy or a bad guy. And I don't know if I like Nynaeve. And I was just like, okay, well, then they're selling it correct. Because that's how it feels in the books. But now, us looking back at it, it feels like Nynaeve is too nice and too good of a person. But if you haven't read the books, she's just as questionable as she should be, I guess.
Well, so, that's good.
Just a weird perspective issue. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked that conversation between the two of them as well. I thought it was played well, at least by Liandrin's character. Nynaeve is, I don't know, her character so far has been a little bit one-dimensional, but...
she got to be a bit more of a bitch in that scene.
A little, she was like, a little.
Hate, man? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's more like I feel like her character's more like, do you hate men? I hate men. Can we hate men together? Like, she's fishing.
Yeah.
Like, I want to hate him.
Yeah.
Let me in.
She needs to be... Her whole characterization in the first several books is just stubborn asshole.
Yeah.
And they haven't seen much of that yet, so... I need more of it.
I do, too. That's, like I said, that's my big complaint about that character.
But what do you, okay, what was your thoughts on the fact that most of this episode is foreshadowing things that will happen in seasons from now at the earliest? It was so focused on the connection between Warder and Aes Sedai and what happens when one of them dies. It was so focused on, even like near the end when he's making offerings to ward off the Forsaken, it was hinting at all these things that aren't going to happen for a while. And I'm just wondering if that was, you thought that was a good idea, or it took something away from what could be going on now.
We'll see. If they are doing just a lot of world building and laying the groundwork, that's fine. So far, it doesn't seem like they're really doing that because they keep skipping over 80% of the world. But if they're laying the groundwork for things to come later in seasons 2 and beyond, that would be great. And I think that would be fine. That being said, I think that they are running into the same problem that Robert Jordan ran into when he wrote the first draft of the book. So when Robert Jordan was first writing the book, there were actually 4 main boys. So there was Perrin, Rand, Matt, and then a fourth character. And he wrote that character. And he had his wife do a beta read through. And she read it and she said, okay, so I like it, but this one character, he doesn't really do anything. He's kind of boring to listen to. And Robert Jordan said, well, yeah, but he's really important in the rest of the series. And she said, well, you need to get rid of him. Otherwise, there's not going to be a rest of the series. And I think that I think the TV show's running into that same issue. I think they are focused too much on this season. And if they do it poorly, there's not going to be a season 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah.
Instead of having, you know, 10 minutes of screen time, that's probably an exaggeration, but 10 minutes of screen time foreshadowing huge events that will happen in season 3 and 4, you should have been giving us more of the world as it is right now. Mm-hmm. Like, that stuff was interesting to me, and it was interesting to your audience that even hasn't read the book, but it's not going to be paid off in so long. What's the point?
Well, like, and I think they could even spend a lot of time in this season if they want to get a twofer where they do foreshadowing of the larger world and still deal with what's going on in this world. They could spend a lot of time with the, Forsaken, is that the series? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they could spend a lot of time on that dynamic because that becomes huge in the rest of the series. And it's still kind of alluded to in the first book with Ismail.
And Ishmael.
Yeah, and a couple of those other characters. Yeah. And I think,
and that's the one that was named this episode. So they're at least doing that.
But and then there's so much stuff that happens in dreams that you could also play around with in the books that they're not doing in the TV show.
They could have done anything with the dreams that they're just ignored.
Yeah, and that is losing them some points.
There's a huge, you've finished this season, right? Now?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a huge moment in episode 8 where a character comes back that hasn't been around since episode frickin' 1 or 2. And it's one of those things where I'm just like, thank you. I was wondering where this person was. But at the same time, I was like, what the hell? Like, why did you do that? Like, it works for things next season, but it just does not work at all for this season. And that's kind of how I feel like a lot of choices. It will work eventually, but you got to get to eventually.
Exactly.
You're not doing a good enough job to get there right now.
Like, yes. If you're going to lay groundwork, you need to make the ground interesting or firm enough to walk on. And right now it's kind of muddy. And they're doing, like you said, they're doing some good things. I thought that the suicide, like, I hate to say this, but I thought the suicide was good.
No, that scene was very well done. It showed the depth of, like, the connection really well. It showed how bad things are going to get in this world. It did a lot of legwork, that suicide scene. And the fact that he knew what he was doing and he set it up by getting the sleeping juice from Nynaeve and then giving it to Lan and then, like, all of that. Like, it was very, very well done. And it was deeply disturbing because of that.
Yeah. That was a good way to. So I think one of the reasons I liked this episode so much is that it begins and ends very strongly.
Yeah.
Like it's bookended.
And it's the only one that stays. Every other episode opens with a flashback to mm-hmm. before the season. This one, it stays all in the present. It doesn't do any of that, which helps it feel more impactful.
Yes.
Even though that makes the cold open a little weaker than the rest.
Yeah. Well, the problem that I'm having with all these stupid flashbacks is that the world is so big that there's not usually a reason for the flashbacks that they show. Like in season or in episode, I think it's 6, where they flash back to the white her beginnings.
On Shanshe. Uh-huh. Yeah. That one was totally pointless.
It was completely pointless.
Cool, but it was totally pointless.
Yeah, it was fine. But it's like, oh, yep, the girls. No one cares.
The whole time, I was just like, why are they doing this? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this? And it never gave you a reason. It was just like, we're just going to make her out to be a badass. I was like, but we know she's a badass. She's in charge of all the Aes Sedai.
Right. She's like, she's clearly no slouch.
We can get into that next episode, but yeah, that was I was just very confused.
Do any more spoilers, but the cold open in the episode after that was useful. I did like that one.
Oh, amazing. And the cold open for the finale is
it good?
Just chef's kiss perfect. Like it's so good.
But that notwithstanding, generally I think they should steer away from the flashbacks because there's so much happening in the here and now. That needs to be you need to extrapolate it. These books are massive and you need to try to avoid leaving stuff out.
You can't make the most exciting part of your episode something that happened before your characters that we're supposed to care about now. Right. Like that doesn't work very well. One thing another fact that Jacob had, because he's like on a lot of the like Reddit forums and people discussing stuff.
Oh, okay.
And there's a theory out there, and I've started following some of them. It's really interesting to see like opinions from people who have not read the books at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that because I watched it with Dylan, who hasn't. And like every time I'd get really excited about something and like nudge him, like when the girl in episode 4 tells Matt the doll's name is Brigitte, and I was like, oh, or Brigitte, and Dylan was like, what is that supposed to mean something? And I was like, no, but yes. And then every time the sword flashes and I'm like, did you see that? He was like, it was a sword. I was like, no, it was a Heron-marked blade. He was like, I don't know what that means. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's a good point. Those things are fun. But then you also get perspectives from them about like, I don't know if I trust Leandrin. I don't know if Nynaeve is a good person. Like that kind of stuff that you're like, oh, I didn't see that. So that's interesting. But my favorite thing about it is they're theorizing. And one theory that they have that the books people are accepting is that they're getting rid of the number 13 as an important number in the show universe, and they're replacing it with 9. Because when they cut off or silence or whatever they call it for Loghain, there's only 9 sisters present.
Mm-hmm.
And there's supposed to be 13 to do any of that kind of power. And that would mean if it only requires 9, I mean, that's so many less characters you have to name and pay for and all that stuff.
Right.
But also the number 13 is significant because there's 13 Forsaken. Uh-huh. And I think there were, I didn't count the statues at the end of this episode of all the Forsaken he was warding off. I should have. But it didn't seem to be 13. So if there are only 9 Forsaken, that would solve one of my biggest issues with the books is the fact that I can't remember half of them.
No, there's like, too many. But yeah, Robert Jordan really does a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like a lot of them aren't doing anything.
No,
like,
they're patsies. They're just there to die.
Yeah. 3 of them die in the first book and it's not even you don't even notice that to like 4 books in and realize that that's what happened.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, these are supposed to be the most terrifying things in the world, and 3 of them died like bitches in the first book. So if he's cutting their numbers down, I think that's a really smart decision because each one's going to be that much more terrifying and useful to the story.
Yeah.
I know where I am in book 9, or at the end of book 8, they introduce one, just for her to basically be like, yeah, I don't get involved in anything unless I'm specifically asked to. I was like, what's the point of your character then? Right. Like, you're just telling other characters that you're not going to be part of the story.
Hi, that's I'm not doing anything, bye.
Useful to no one.
So,
and then there's two others that are just chilling on an island somewhere with a bunch of slaves. And it was like, what is the point of these chapters? They're not doing anything.
So I'll be interested to see, since you were talking about the nine Forsaken, that brings up a thing I was curious, and I'll be interested to see how they do it. But with each individual season, so the books, they are structured very similarly to like Harry Potter, where, you know, Harry goes to school, Harry gets a new instructor of the dark arts, that person ends up being a bad person. Ooh, he defeats Voldemort. Right. Again. And every single book is that exact story told slightly differently. Almost every single Wheel of Time book is like Rand and family get further and further away. They discover something else. A Forsaken shows up. They defeat a Forsaken. Which gets a little formulaic if you're going to do it nine different times.
It gets formulaic, but luckily in the books, I think that's like the people that a lot of book readers call like the dull period or the
yes, it the very much
part
is.
Of the books.
Yeah,
and that's
books
true.
Like seven through 12.
Seven, eight, and nine, or six, seven, and eight. Maybe it's just seven and eight so far because I'm only halfway through nine. Have both had so much going on that I didn't care about.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, Rand in the middle of some giant fight that was not built up at all. It just, this happened. And it's so hard to follow because you get so bored. And then the ending massive fight scene comes almost out of nowhere. And you're not really sure what's going on until the next book recaps it for you. And you're just like, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
So if we can get rid of a lot of that and keep with the interesting things that are happening, I think shutting down that many Forsaken is a really smart choice.
Oh, absolutely. I hope they did that. Because like you said, it's hard to remember 13 different really important bad guys. Like, I don't care. There's enough bad people who aren't Forsaken. So,
right? And I really hope they focus a little bit more on them. Which, I mean, they're doing a good job of making villains out of the White Cloaks, which they're, you know, side villains.
Mm-hmm.
They have a couple other villains that they reintroduce before the end of the series that are, if not, you know, full-on big bads, they're at least seeming like full-on big bads for certain characters. And they're doing a better job of recontextualizing the rivalries and the fights in this season. And this is thinking about the season as a whole and not this specific episode again. But they're doing a better job of giving reasons why things are happening in the TV version of things,
mm-hmm.
even if they're not making it as interesting. Like, they're trying to apologize for some weird choices in the books by making weirder choices in the TV show. So it kind of works if you're having a 30,000 foot view, but if you're just in the moment, it doesn't work as well.
Sure.
So
well, we'll see how they pull it together.
Where you are. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. The funeral at the end, the Gregorian chanting and chest pounding. It was like a mixture of a bunch of different religious like symbolism, which got muddled for me.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, I don't know. You're borrowing from so many different sources right now that it doesn't feel like it's a coherent ceremony.
Correct.
Because it had some Judaism in there. It had some like old Christianity in there. It had some Hindu stuff in there. And it was just like, this is all kind of over the place. Like, I need you to focus better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing they've done really well. Like, the visual diary of the show has been really good. Like, you immediately recognize an Aes Sedai because of the ring, and you know basically what her temperament is because of the color she wears. Other than Two Rivers, every like village and people group have a specific look or specific costuming that you can immediately place them, because you don't have, you know, 10 pages to say this Gleeman had a multicolored cloak, so you know he was a blah blah blah, blah, and the Tuathuan wearing mismatched nonsense because they don't ascribe to anything. Like, you don't have time to do that. So they've been doing a very good job of the visual representation of it. Even in the Aes Sedai and the White Tower, it's all been like you got it just by looking at it, until that ceremony at the end was just like, I don't really know what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, they're all in the same white cloak now. I'm not sure who's in charge. I have no idea who this guy is. I think he was supposed to be like the captain of the warders, but he was just talking and leading them. I was like, I don't know who this person is and why he's in charge of this funeral. It just kind of felt muddled at the very end. But the like emotional beats were there and they worked really well.
Yes. Emotional, yes. Symbolism, eh.
Yeah.
C minus for symbolism.
So, I remember leaving that episode and me and Dylan both, reader and someone who hasn't read it, both looked up that picture that was in Moraine's, the only like personal thing inside her chambers. Mm-hmm. When she opened that little, what are they called? It's like a relic. It's like a Catholic iconography looking thing. What are those? What are they called?
I don't remember, to be honest.
religious art. It looked like a religious art piece that was in like a golden foiled little dome.
Are you just talking about like
that
a
she
triptych?
Opened? It was just a painting. Yeah, but there's a specific word for it when it's a religious art and they put them behind those doors for whatever reason. Doesn't matter. Couldn't be further from mattering. It just looked like that, and she opened it, and it didn't give you enough focus on the picture for you to even really tell what it was, but it lingered on it like it was important. And so it left me, as you know, this wasn't in the book, so it left me really wondering what the heck this was, and it left people who hadn't read the books also being like, what was that picture thing? Like asking me, and I was like, I don't know. So we looked up a picture of it, and a screenshot of it from the episode was blurry. Like, it wanted you interested in it, but didn't have any interest in telling you what it was until the next episode.
Mm.
So that was a very strange choice, I think. I like what it ended up being. I really liked what it ended up being, but it was just weird to focus on it without giving you a hint at what it was going to be,
mm-hmm.
I think. Because it was like it built it up like it was an Easter egg for people who had read the books, but people who read the books were just like, I don't know what this weird painting in her room is. I don't remember ever going to her room in the book.
Right.
So how many more episodes have you seen? You said you haven't finished the season yet.
So I am, so there's 8 episodes. I think I have either finished episode 7 or I'm like 3/4 of the way through episode 7.
Okay. All right.
I'm basically
done. Yeah. Episode 6, I'm looking at this list and I think either episode 6 or 7 are my favorite in the series. And I think it's probably 6.
Mm, I'll be interested to hear
why. Seven made me too angry with one specific choice. And 8 just, I felt like you could have split 8 into 2 episodes and it'd been much more impactful.
Or it'd be good. Like the Hunger Games and you split
well.
It into 2 and it's terrible. Either way.
Yeah, maybe. It ended well, but it was just like, that was so much. You didn't have time to get to know most of the characters that were a big deal mm-hmm. in it. Like, it just felt like really rushed by the end. But episode 6, I'm like, it was solid all the way through. I loved the opening. I mean, we're going to talk about this next time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there was the show got better and better as it went on. And then there's a tipping point where there's diminishing returns for the rest of the season. And that's somewhere in the middle of episode 7. Or it tips. So, I don't know. We'll see what you think.
Yes, we
and
will.
And we'll see. Do you have any other comments? I was going to say, and we'll see y'all next time, but... If you had more notes, we could talk about
it. No, that episode, we did it thoroughly for once.
Yeah. All right, well, you should, I don't know if I want you to finish it and then rewatch the episodes before you record, or wait and have just a fresh take of the last episode. Because I'm now, that I've seen them all, I'm rewatching each episode before we record.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe you should wait and you should watch episode 8 like right before we sit down to record.
Okay, Mom.
So that it's a little bit more fresh. Okay. I don't like being called Mom. It's a little disturbing to me.
You don't like it?
But I'll take it.
Okay. Glad you just leaned into it real fast. I hate it. Thank you. I hate it, but I love it.
I mean, if you're listening to my authority, I'll take it, but I don't specifically like the nomenclature.
Exactly. All right. Works for me.
My brain's broken. All right. Weird side note. The final book for the Expanse series is out as of like a week ago, and I just started reading it, and it's already freaking amazing.
That sounds about right. So, he's a pretty good author.
Yeah, if you haven't, or they are a pretty good author since it's a team writing as one person. I can't wait to figure out how the whole thing ends and watching that show. We might want to do this, but for the Expanse TV show, except it's a lot longer, so maybe do like a season for an episode.
It's very long.
But yeah, and it's hard to like binge because every episode's just heavy. But I'm really interested in seeing what's going on with that series because the series is ending after book 6 or season 6.
Oh, that's interesting.
The books go on to book 9, but there's a 30-year time jump in between book 6 and book 7. So it makes sense that they're ending it there. It has a good, solid ending. It just doesn't answer every question that the books ask. And the last trilogy, basically, that closes it out, answer the big questions from the first book. So it's going to feel unfinished, but at the same time, like, the human conflict will be done. So it's a weird choice for them, but I hope they follow it up with a movie or two to give you the series finale from the books. Yeah, sorry. That was very much not on topic, but I'm excited about the last book, so I wanted to mention it.
Well, there you go.
That's why I haven't finished book 9 yet, because that book came out and I'm more than halfway through it already, even though I just started like 2 days ago.
I thought you texted me like this morning that the book came out.
Maybe it was this morning. I don't know. I've read a lot of it already.
Well, that's exciting.
I started reading it last night. I think I downloaded it the day before and started reading it last night, and I got pretty far. And I haven't got to the one thing that's annoying about those books is there's always a tipping point somewhere near or right before the third act starts where I literally can't stop reading them. Like, I have to just finish at that point.
Burn through
it. Everything's too much.
Sure. Well, that's exciting.
So I haven't hit that tipping point yet, but I did read quite a bit of it.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad it's good.
All right. So there's your side recommendation. Anything interesting you're reading right now?
No. I'm rereading Lord of the Rings just because I really enjoy like the relaxed feeling I get when I read those books.
No, that's 100% fair. I love rereading things. Mm-hmm. I reread all of the Mistborn trilogy last year. I reread Ender's Game and
speaking
RX
of rereading things and going back through them. So I don't know if you've followed any of it at all, but the Name of the Wind series, the fan base has almost completely turned on Rothfuss because well, it's been so long since he's published the book that people have just had time to reread it like 2 or 3 or 4 times. And the more that people reread it, they're like, oh, this isn't good. Like, this seems like
so much time has passed that a lot of things have become kind of problematic in the series.
Right. It's really funny.
The specific reason.
It's really funny to watch how everyone has gone like, so I know that you, after the first reading and maybe the second one, you were like, oh, he's an unreliable narrator. And everyone has been like, that's the dumbest excuse for all of the crap he puts into this thing. And it's really funny to watch the fan base just like eviscerate this guy.
Well, the specific reason they turned on him is actually like kind of messed up. He does these charity streams a lot. Because he's a gamer and stuff too, and he does these charity streams where he'll offer all kinds of random things if you donate to a certain amount. And he offered to read the opening, like, thing that's basically the same in all three books, on both books.
Yeah.
And a random chapter that isn't gonna spoil anything from the Doors of Stone, if they reached a certain dollar amount. They didn't reach that dollar amount, but he gave him a double or nothing that says, if you double it in the amount of time that we're doing the stream or whatever, I'll do both. And they did reach that or something, or they got close. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. But he then was like, okay, well, I'll read the opening chapter at least still. And then didn't announce when he was going to do that. And he took like 3 weeks to get to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, his crazy loyal fan base flipped on him and it just snowballed from there. Like they got really mad. He's now read it. He's now recorded and read that thing. He hasn't read one random chapter, but as far as I can tell, they didn't meet the like donation requirement to get him to read that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't research it that much because anytime you get that deep into a fandom, I hate myself.
Yeah, probably
I'll theorize, fair. I'll read your books, all that stuff, but I'm not cooperating with other people in the fandom.
Smart.
So I haven't watched that video because I don't want to read, like, I don't really want to, like, that's just going to whet my appetite kind of thing. I need to know how that story ends so badly. I have so many theories about how it's going to go. Don't tease me with it. Just give me the book.
See, I still
I'm not watching that video.
I still don't think he's going to finish it. I really don't.
I think the fact that he's putting out bits and pieces of it means there's gotta be, it's gotta be close to being
no,
published.
I think he's just hoping but he dies before he has to do anything with it. Like it's been,
I mean,
so long.
There's no way.
And
to,
like yeah. you said, a lot of things have become problematic from the first couple of books. Also, the first book was written, like the first two books were basically set in university and he was in college for a very long time. So he was basically in college while he was writing the novels. He's now been out of that world for quite a while. And I think he's like, he's yeah. grown up. I think he has gotten a lot more life experience and I think he's not really sure.
I mean, he had a mental breakdown and like there was some like serious issues he went through. Like I can't imagine he's in the same headspace he was when he started these series,
and
even close to it.
And I don't
because
know,
his fandom has gone. No, finish what you were saying.
I was just going to say, I don't know about you, but a lot of writers, and Stephen King has even talked about this, if you put something down for too long, it's almost impossible to pick it back up.
Yeah. I feel like that might be happening a little bit, but also I kind of feel like if I was him and my fandom had gotten that toxic and horrible, I wouldn't give them what they wanted either.
That's
like.
Fair.
The Rick and Morty people who hate their fans now but are locked into making like 100 more episodes or something and like 4 more seasons, like they hate their fans.
Their fans are
and
gross
nothing
and
they
smelly.
Can do about it.
I wouldn't like those fans either.
So
those are just
I
kind of
feel like that's
people.
What yeah. I kind of feel like that's what Rothfuss is dealing with too. His fans have become this toxic, hateful group that he's like, I don't even want to finish a book for you. You suck.
I mean, they probably wouldn't be toxic and hateful if you would have finished the series in a timely manner.
It's a decent point. All right. Now that we're insanely off topic, you can
no,
follow
we're not.
Us
you
on
are.
Twitter
Shut
at
up.
Book underscore pod and email us at bookreportpod@gmail.com. I really need to go take my dogs for a walk, so I'm going to duck out. We'll see y'all next week when we talk about The Flame of Tar Valon and meet Suan Sanche.
Woohoo.
Yay. I don't know why I'm cheering.
I don't know.